whose fault.
Wow. And we're back.
I'm doing my best low voice, radio voice.
Have you ever done, like, you're very rarely in the low range when you talk.
And I wake up in the morning.
Oh, yeah?
Batman.
Oh, I'm Batman.
I'm Batman.
I'm always Batman.
The proximity effect.
Yeah, no, it's pretty fun. Dude, how are you? Sorry I was late.
Oh, it's good. It's good. Look at you over here with your West Point hoodie and your Batman mask.
Hey, man. Well, they won. West Point beat Air Force.
Yeah, both of our teams won.
Yeah, your Purdue thing.
My Purdue thing. Take that, Michigan State.
Take that, Michigan State. You're beaten by losers.
Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. That's the thing. So being a Purdue fan is kind of like, I mean, being a Cubs fan for about 100 years. Like, it's like one of those things where it's like, oh, they lost. Okay, whatever. You know.
It's a miracle.
But then when they win, you're like, hey, they won.
Yeah. It's like teams don't disband and stuff. Like, shouldn't there be like a 100-year losing streak rule where you have to disband? Stop wasting these people's time.
You're using up a perfectly good ball field, okay?
Right. We could have another team here.
That's right. Older team.
Are you a Cubs fan?
A bit, yeah.
No, I'm not judging, just ask.
I mean, the closeness to Chicago thing, it's kind of one of those things where when you're growing up, you kind of choose a team, and sometimes it's literally based off proximity.
Right.
So.
I know. I like the Colts when they're winning.
Yeah, I mean, sure, I'll watch the Colts. I don't watch much NFL anymore.
No?
I kind of got tired of someone always being hurt on the field. Mm. There's always someone who's down. Modern day Coliseum. You know.
Oh, yes. No, the gladiators are paid exceptionally well at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Ugh, not that that justifies it, but.
Nope. Nope. Yeah, I don't know. It's we should probably do, I think that was brought up in one of our moral theology classes at some point, like the problem of like the morality of the NFL.
Oh, yeah, it was.
Like, it existing, you know.
I think one of our professors mentioned like how he thought boxing was. He said boxing wearing like padding and protective equipment is probably justifiable, but like the prize fights and stuff that we watch these days where you've literally got two tanks smashing into each other without any protective gear.
Yeah, it's not a good idea.
That, and then you get into like, you know, UFC and stuff like that. And holy smokes, is that starting to get off the chain with the transgender movement and things like that, where they're like, well, why can't a man fight a woman? There was a man versus a woman fight in Poland.
Oh, gosh.
It had to be stopped almost immediately.
Yeah.
Almost immediately.
Like,
just follow the science. The average man has something like 100, I'm going to spitball this number, something like 100 times the level of testosterone. Like, can you imagine? And even if the other girl is good and in amazing shape.
Oh, man. Just thinking about that fight. I don't even know any of the details.
It stopped. It stopped within like the first 30 seconds. It was over.
Oh, man. I'm on the edge of my seat right now. I know. Well, thinking about
social media exploded. I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't say I follow, but every once in a while I keep my eye on blood sport.
On the crazy.
Well, yeah. I mean, like, it's kind of like bullfighting. Who was it? Fulton Sheen said in one of his telecasts back in the 50s, early 60s, he said, one of the marks of the complete collapse of civilization, he says, will be the return of bullfighting.
Oh, geez.
And man, did we skip that one.
Yep.
We went straight from the animal back to the man. And gladiatorial combat, man. Well, consider.
And spring gave summer and fall a miss and went straight on to winter.
Ah, well, that was... I don't know what the word is for that. That's art imitating life.
It's true.
Good play of the Monty Python there.
Yeah, that is.
But
I think that's the right season order. I can't remember exactly. But anyway, but the amount of dollars that get spent around like this industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is not what we're talking about today, by the way.
It kind of is, honestly.
Well, I guess that does have a very strange sort of tie-in to what you want to talk about.
I did not mean to do that. Our topic today will be leisure, brothers and sisters.
What is true leisure?
This
will be a whole different facet maybe to our conversation than we didn't expect. Like, how does this thing play into leisure? Is it real leisure?
Please God, the work of the Holy Spirit? Anyways, blood sport is a very fascinating thing to me because
blood sport.
Of who I am. I don't know what else you call it. There's a difference between, say, basketball and football, and we both acknowledge that they're sports, that there's some sort of game that's being played out in an athletic fashion. But the football player is doing something significantly different than the basketball player.
Oh, yes.
Or the soccer player. Well, or even the hockey player, which is this really, like...
I think hockey might be one of the next things down the list, like almost immediately following football. Mm-hmm. The number of times that people get slammed into the wall on purpose, like that's part of the game.
It is part of the game. Well, even the fight seems to have a place in that game. Like you are, quote unquote, allowed to get in a scuffle with a guy, but you've already accepted the penalty box kind of thing.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And it's a strange sort of gentleman's game, you know?
Yeah, sure. Just as much as bare knuckle boxing is
gentleman's game. Or dueling.
Fisticuffs, yes. Pistols at dawn.
Yes. So anyways, I don't know how to end this topic of violence in sports or violent sports, but let's talk about leisure. I was late today because I have been working 2 weeks in a row without a day off. And man, was I tired. And I looked at my calendar as – I was like, oh, I've got 6 minutes to get to recording. I was like, I'd better call Dan, tell him I'm going to be about a half hour late. And
worked out.
He was super cool with it. Good friend.
Every now and then.
Yeah, most of the time.
Well, anyways, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Okay.
Welcome
to the Day Useful podcast where we just pat ourselves on the back all the entire time.
What? I said most of the time, Dan. Most of the time.
Okay, yeah. That's
right. No. Friendship turns into a blood sport.
That's right.
But no, I was...
Full tackle podcast.
So this is a full contact podcast. Expect psychological damage.
That's right. Dementia by age 50.
Ooh. Anywho.
That's happening to NFL players.
Yeah, that's darkness. Yep. Anyways.
Yeah, no kidding.
To return to something more positive, so I...
There you go.
I put clothes on at that point. Again, got on my pajamas and cleaned myself up, and then I got over here. But I was like, what are we going to talk about? Because I had been literally busy for 2 weeks, and I had not had time to think about like the recording. I was like, but thank God for seminary. You send us to school for 6 years to produce a priest, and if he's doing anything productive,
right?
I mean, aside from prayer, then he might learn something. And I was like, ooh, leisure. And I had written a paper on the leisure of video games. Mm. I can't remember what year that was.
I remember you doing this.
And it was actually a lot of fun. And I wasn't even – because I was doing all the research. But no, I actually – there was a lot of historical research. Brothers and sisters, we are now at a stage in our historical existence where there's been 40 years of video gaming going
on.
And so you
have the one line that you say about this, I love it.
Which one?
It's the thing where the generation of people who are coming into adulthood right now are starting to be able to beat kids at video games.
We are the first generation, brothers and sisters, who can beat our children at video games.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's the thing.
Well, it is. And sit back, kid, relax. I'll get you to the, you know, secret kingdom or whatever you're playing. Anyways.
What's that? Is that a reference to something?
No, I mean, like, you ever play a video game?
There's always a secret kingdom. Yeah. But
I don't, remember, like, the hidden levels in Mario where, like, if you just jump, it was 8-bit, so maybe it was even before your time, but you could, like, jump over the screen and you would lose sight of Mario, but the screen would keep moving. And so you're like, oh, I'm in a secret level. And you could hear his feet pitter-pattering or however it was. And you could get, like, extra lives. I can't even remember what was hidden. But anyway, they were really clever hidden. Okay. Back in the day before they could barely do anything with digital entertainment.
Right.
There were some really clever little hidden levels. Anyways, you remember when you jumped on top of the pipe and pressed down and you're like, oh, there's a hidden level down here with coins.
Anyways. Yeah, I didn't have very much contact with Mario growing up, but I know generally what you're talking about.
Okay, gotcha. You're picking up what I'm putting down.
I was more of a PC player.
Long story short,
yeah.
I spent 16 pages of paper on the concept of video games and leisure, as well as like why it's a different type of leisure, or even if it could be considered leisure.
Mm.
So what's leisure? Let's get down to that first of all.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things on the order of virtue, right? There's always there's always an excess and a deficiency that could happen around these things, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you go into it.
Well, so like leisure is why you exist, brothers and sisters. Like in the same way as if, you know, is the Sabbath made for the man or the man for the Sabbath? Is leisure for the sake of work or is work for the sake of leisure? Well, work is for the sake of leisure. It's the opposite kind of work. It's an activity that you do simply for the sake of the activity, not just for Oh, you know, because I want to produce something. I need to earn money, or I need a new widget, or we need furniture. So I'll go build some. Like a man.
Just like one. Yeah. Just like one.
And then they invented IKEA and ruined everything. I think IKEA is okay. Hopefully
who's in charge of IKEA? Is what this is the some Norse country, isn't it? Isn't
yeah,
like Sweden or
I don't know.
I can't
do you
remember.
Do you own anything that's IKEA?
No, it's garbage.
Okay, great. Anyways,
it's made of particle board and like you know glue, Elmer's glue.
Honestly, yeah, one of my bookshelves collapsed and it was like knockoff IKEA, and I was like, oh, geez. In the middle of the night, woke
it's
me
just
up.
Just glue. It's not even particle board.
It was atrocious. Anyways.
Anyway, continue.
Shout out to Mo Fox who replaced my bookshelf. Thank you. Anyways, no. So leisure is that thing that you do simply for the sake of the activity,
right?
And it's rejuvenating. It's pure enjoyment. It's you know the grace of God that's interacting now. Mm-hmm. And then you get into some really weird gray areas here because right. like to talk about like pure leisure
yeah.
is very rare because a man can say like hunt and he is, you know, both please God providing food for himself, his family, or just like, you know, you kill an animal, it's overpopulated, and then you give it to the butcher and the guy grinds it up and makes something tasty. But the worst, right. well, I'm just saying.
That's just how it is. Look, well, so this is a funny thing. How many times, you know, without revealing anything from the confessional, how many times in confession I've gotten a handful of times, even only my few months of priesthood, people going, so I did this thing on Sunday, and I don't know if it was going over the boundary of what like true leisure is for
and
Sunday.
Going into work?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so I mean, like, it wasn't necessarily them going to work, like right, at right. their job, but it was sure. like, it was something that like, I'm not sure if it's servile labor. I enjoy well, no, it.
I mean, I'm speaking know? Outside of the confessional. I mean, talking right. to people after Mass and stuff, they're like, oh, I'm going to go do yard work. Mm-hmm. And you ask yourself, well, is it like necessary to do that work? Or are they actually depriving some sense of fulfillment? Like this is – it's good to put my hands in the earth kind of thing. Or right. I just like taking the steps as I mow my lawn.
Right. So this is this is Pat Kale to a T. Hi, Dad. he loves gardening.
Yeah.
And so over the course of like the summer, he does all this sort of stuff out in the garden. He's like, this stuff is rejuvenating for me.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to be a little bit apropos of the one talk we had at Continuing Ed Days about like seeing God's creation as like an instance of being intimately connected to the divine.
Right.
Like my dad has a good sense of that. Mm-hmm. He has a... You know, well, the hands in the earth sense, right?
Right, right, right. Well, yeah. I mean, what was the first thing? God put us in a garden.
And yeah, right, exactly.
Before sin. And that's the interesting thing. Like, the work was the leisure at the time.
Yeah.
The curse brings about the fact that now work becomes a drudgery and a toil. Mm-hmm. But at first, we were supposed to be cultivating God's existence.
Right.
Which brings up an interesting theological theory that part of the reason why we've got like venomous snakes and mosquitoes and stuff is because the angels who had fallen were supposed to be taking care of that part of creation. And man,
sounds about right.
It's an interesting thought.
Yeah.
And man was supposed to be setting that right after the angels had fallen. Like now it's your job because you're going to be doing something here is to be taking care of these imbalances in nature. Then man got imbalanced and the whole universe did. Anyway, interesting. Well,
so it's
theory.
Our fault that there are mosquitoes?
What?
Dang it.
that we didn't fix them. Anyway. Yeah,
right.
Anyways, just an interesting theological thought. Mm-hmm. So leisure. Like, or consider even sports. The act of playing a game can also be, well, I want to improve at the game.
Sure.
So I practice, and then as I engage in the sport, my mind is constantly ticking away. But there's something different there, like, so like when I'm driving in traffic, your traffic was getting here, took me an extra 4 or 5 minutes because there was some road construction and then one of those, garbage trucks on the road. And you're just like, and there's a double yellow line. No.
Nothing I can do about it. I'm stuck forever.
Well, I wasn't stuck forever, but it was longer than normal.
Yeah.
But the, like being back in the stand. Is that a bottle or a bomb? Well, we're going to sit here for about 20 minutes. But Gotta have a sense of humor about that stuff.
I guess so. If only a sense.
Yeah. But like, so your brain's like clicking away. Like, this guy's changing lanes, and that's a big truck in front of me, so it's going to be moving at a slower rate. And, you know, even there's that third part of me that's saying, like, and if he breaks suddenly, where do I want to be, kind of thing? Mm. And where could I be given wherever all the rest of the traffic is? Mm-hmm. Okay, my brain's doing some work, just like if I was playing, you know, hockey. I don't play hockey. But if I was playing, like, basketball or something like that.
Sure.
Where are the players? How far away is the hoop?
It's a little bit of strategy going on.
Right. But there's
spatial strategy.
But there's a significant difference between just driving in traffic. I'm not extracting a great deal of joy from that.
Nope.
and like playing the game of basketball, where my mind is going and excuse me, figuring things out. Honestly, I don't play that much basketball either. The shout out to my pastor, Father Terry Coonan, who loves
plays basketball all the time.
All the time. Yeah. But you know, back in the day when I did play it, that's what my brain was doing. And you know, not to keep bringing up Warhammer 40,000, but that's sort of what my mind's doing in that too. Is I'm solving problems, I'm doing math, and then moving little toy soldiers around. Fine.
What are you getting at?
What am I getting at? Leisure becomes very, very hard to describe when you actually get down to like trying to describe doing something for simply the sake of it. And you're like, well, yeah, I'm plunging my hands into the earth here. I'm mowing the lawn. Mm-hmm. But aren't you like doing servile work? Yes, but I'm enjoying it. And so like, is that pure leisure?
I guess so. So here's the thing though. I think that would be necessary then to actually define what servile labor is.
Mm.
Because
is it drudgery? Is it pure drudgery? Because then does my job become? Right. See, here's the interesting thing.
Right.
I love the priesthood.
Sure.
If you've listened to this program, you know I have a fondness for that thing God's called me to.
And any person who has, you know, their everyday job, the reason they're doing that job, hopefully, please God, is because they actually enjoy what they're doing.
Right.
I mean, not everybody has that grace, but. I see what you're saying here. Like someone who's enjoying something that doesn't have anything to do with their job, but is still work, still requires energy from them. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, like the same feelings and like experience on the personal level can happen at one's job as well. So it's like, well, what's the difference then?
Right.
Okay. So that's the distinction that needs to be made.
And I don't know if we can make it exactly perfectly. Right. I mean, well, so consider.
It's interesting. So like, but one more point I want to make on this. Like the reason that people even do religion at all is for the sake of God and God alone.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So anything having to do with the faith, eventually you get down, like a little kid asking the why question over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
Why are we going to church on Sunday? To, you know, praise God. Well, why? Just because we should praise God. Well, why? Because of God.
Right. That's
and eventually it's just over and over again because of God, because of God, because of God. Because like, you know, eventually it's just like beatific vision. You know?
You exist for this.
Right. So like true leisure is something that is an imitation of or actually I guess it would be rather a living out of true religion in the sense of the virtue of religion. What is owed to God.
Right.
You know? The sub virtue of justice, right?
The purity of worship is leisure by definition. Isn't that scary? I mean, not scary, but like I'd never. Am I getting that right?
The purity of worship is leisure.
Yeah,
I guess so. In the terms,
or the purity of leisure is worship.
I think that would probably be better.
That's a better way of phrasing it.
I think that's better. No, because it's something that is simply for itself. Well, that's why, you know, people will refer to it sort of colloquially as like wasting time with God.
Yeah.
You know,
in
because in the sense, in the eyes of the world, it looks like a completely useless, you know, enterprise.
Yeah.
Why are you going to church on Sunday? It doesn't do anything.
Right. Well, by definition, I know. Like, we're not per se producing something.
No.
And that's the interesting, which again, what's the purpose of your life? You know, well, to make money? Or to like build the better widget,
right?
Like, I mean, is that the purpose of existence? What does the secular world think about that?
Mm.
And that's kind of again, I guess I can climb back into that. I'm just actually now just shocked trying to realize like how different my mind might be, in a manner of speaking, as far as like considering existence from like the common secular man.
Yeah.
Setting that to the side, so we can argue there are scales of leisure then, where like the purest form is worship, and then you can start to stratify down.
Well, I think then everything would still eventually, because okay, so thinking about way back to ancient Greek philosophy.
Yeah.
Starting to talk about like, you know, Socrates and mm-hmm. Aristotle. And these guys would talk about, you know, like what it means to be happy. And they, I guess they would be talking about true leisure. Like,
right.
And they would say that the highest occupation would be the philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
Because he thinks about the highest things.
Right.
And all of his energy is spent towards, you know, what they considered to be considering the divine.
Right.
Right. Now, of course, the ancient Greeks, and they had limitations as far as like what they understood the divine.
Sure, they lacked some divine revelation. But it's actually amazing how far you can get in natural philosophy to God.
Yeah. Yeah. Aristotle is amazing. There's a reason why Thomas Aquinas quotes him all the time. Mm-hmm. It's because he got a lot of stuff right, even mm-hmm. without revelation, which is amazing. Beautiful. So it's more proof that, you know, there's so much that we can gain about the knowledge of God, even, you know, without theology.
Right.
So, but anyway, that aside, like philosophy for them, and not just because they were philosophers, but simply because they thought through these things, they realized that philosophy was the highest calling.
Sure.
Because at that point, they didn't have theologians.
Meh.
But I mean, that was as far as they could go. So I agree with them. At the time, like it's about, you know, where are you oriented to? Like what is the highest thing to
orient
concern
on.
Yourself with? Yeah. So the highest things to concern yourself with would be basically metaphysics at that time, sure. Right? So what is beyond this world? What's the underpinning of this world? How are we here? Why am I here? All of these things,
why
right?
existence kind of thing.
Yeah. And then
the kid's question.
Yeah. Well, sort of.
Leisure seems to center a lot on the childlike. Here I say that as I look at my Ninja Turtles. But go on.
Yeah. So, and it's an interesting thing to think about. You know, there's so much other things that we occupy ourselves with. Even in the priesthood, there's so many, you know, menial tasks. Now, granted, necessary things that need to get done.
Well, I mean, why was I late? Because for 2 weeks I've been doing that thing that I love, mm-hmm. but at the same time, like, it was work.
Right.
And I don't know, see, there it is. Like, how much of it was leisure and how much of it was work? Well, mm-hmm. at that point, I really can't fully separate it. It's a very strange thing.
Yeah. Well, and that's another funny thing, you know, keep the Sabbath holy, you know, which when we talk about keeping the Sabbath holy, we necessarily sometimes end up slipping into a conversation about leisure.
Right.
But for the priest,
it's the work day.
It's the work day.
Sabbath is
like,
the work day.
the weekend is exhausting. Like mm-hmm. it's the heaviest part of our schedule sometimes, right. You know. I mean, I don't know how many Saturdays and Sundays I've just been completely zonked at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, it's very clearly not just about, you know, relaxation then. It's like the leisure might still be there for the priest who's doing work on Sunday. Mm-hmm. But keep in mind, we said that, you know, the highest form of leisure is worship.
Worship.
And who's hopefully doing that the best at Mass on Sunday?
Please God, the priest.
Hopefully the priest.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Sometimes. But but there it is.
There's a human aspect of that too. But
well, what was, I think it was, one of the good saints, Reformation saints. An angel supposedly pointed out to him that the person in the crowd who was the most holy and most regal at a Mass, even as good as whatever was going on at the Mass, some high Mass, was some little pious old lady in the corner, and she was the one who was most engaged mm-hmm. in the act of worship, and she glowed. Anyways, but there it is like, I just think about different forms of leisure then, and like, I mean, these Ninja Turtles, for example, this not plastic turtle I hold in my hand right now, I would spend hours when I was a little kid telling little stories to myself, basically, with these ninjas. And sometimes I'd have a partner or two, you know, other friends with other action figures. And we would just tell these stories about them battling Shredder and the Foot Clan and act them out, you know, in plastic.
That's
and
awesome.
It was. It was. Awesome. And for hours, two or three.
Right.
And you were just engrossed. And what did I have at the end of it? Nothing. I mean, in a manner of speaking, like, I had made no money. I had not built an IKEA chair. And thank God. And
nobody wants that.
Nobody wants that. I hadn't invented a better light bulb. But the joy of it all that I had gained. And yeah, especially when interacting with another person. Although, again, even on my own.
Well, there's imagination involved.
Yeah. Tell me about that. What do you think about the imagination and leisure?
So I think imagination is the philosophy of children.
That's deep. Explore that.
I mean, think about this. You know, for children, they don't have necessarily the ability, maybe the intellectual capacity at that point in life. Maybe some of them do, but not. I mean, very, very clearly not to any particular degree that an adult hopefully should. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, that adult ability with the brain, with the mind to think deeply about important things. Okay.
Okay.
So the best they can do is they can enter into fantasy, and then the purest, you know, sense of that term.
Sure.
Right. And create worlds. But in doing that, they're already making use of the human faculty of like what is true.
Yes. I was just thinking about that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And like the moral and
right.
And like, so like whenever, and this goes into the video game paper, like the engagement of morality, there has to be some truth or some goodness here, you know. Mm-hmm. The turtles have to save April O'Neil from Krang and the Shredder. The knight has to slay the dragon to save the princess.
Right.
And
St. George pray for us.
St. George pray for us.
So just as much as like a good storyteller who is an adult has to have like a supreme knowledge of the truth to be able to communicate it in a good way. Like this is why Tolkien is such a prime example of this sort of thing, right? Mm-hmm. It's the story has nothing to do in the content of the story about God, but it has underneath it everything to do about God.
Right.
You know? And so the same thing is true. Children who don't have necessarily the capability of understanding the intellectual thing, the truths, and then applying them to a story, they do have the ability to make a story based on what they know is true. It's sort of an interesting thing that has to be.
Wow.
It's something that shifts at a certain point in life.
Right, right. Like in a Rubik's Cube or a kaleidoscope.
Yeah, sure.
But this is, yeah. Now that you hit on it, like there is something creative about leisure, even in and of itself.
Yeah.
Like it's unavoidable.
Here's your garden image again.
Right. Like mm-hmm. If you're engaging in leisure simply for the sake of the activity and it is good and true and beautiful, it will bear fruit. Mm-hmm. It will be, I don't want to say productive.
Well, maybe productive in a Christian sense of the word.
Right. Creative. Right, I mean, it'll.
Right.
It'll, you know.
Life-giving.
Life-giving.
I mean, yeah.
And so like those, and that takes me maybe to Bloodsport. There is something deeply. Again, like
for those who are just popping into the episode.
Well, if you're jumping around, good point, luck.
Bloodsport in reference to the NFL.
Right. Or boxing or professional boxing, perhaps. Yeah. But there is something, I don't know. Again, as you go down in strat and in level, as far as satisfaction goes, as your leisure becomes more degraded, we'll say. And again, I'm not saying necessarily even debauched, but just degraded. You get a less and less satisfactory return.
Mm.
So
yeah.
So even in the NFL, I find that to some degree more satisfying than playing a video game.
Sure.
And because there's sportsmanship involved, because there's something closer, say, to the true and the good and the beautiful that sport.
Because there's real humans involved.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And then as you enter into the video game, I get, again, it's perhaps more addictive because I'm actually engaging in a much more biological the dopamine rush is present in the video game. The quick return.
Your immediate involvement in it is much more immediate. You're much more engaged, right?
Right.
Yeah.
But
assuming that things like the NFL are morally ambiguous, morally neutral, I guess. Sure. Which that might be, like I said, another conversation for another time.
Another conversation for another time.
The participation in like the watching of NFL stuff. Okay, fine. Some to get to your point in a sort of what it means practically. Person who enjoys to, watch the Colts game with his family when they're playing, whenever he gets the chance to, because it's a moment of, you know, bonding and relaxation with his family, and he enjoys the actual sport itself. Sure. That might be true leisure.
Right.
True leisure.
Sure.
But the person who by himself, and I don't mean to call anybody out with this, but like by himself, you know, even if he's a churchgoer, gets home from church, plops down on the couch for the rest of the day to watch all of the content of the NFL stuff that he possibly can over the course of the day, even if they're teams he doesn't care about, even if they're teams that, you know, are terrible,
right,
that are really actually not good at the sport, but simply from the perspective of just consuming, getting all of it in there.
Well, I hate to say it, but
it can be vicious.
Well, as far as
the word advice.
You've taken something good and you've begun to twist it.
Yeah.
And
there's your degradation, right? Even to the point, perhaps, of debauchery.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Jordan Peterson, along those lines, we mentioned him once or twice. And again, brilliant psychologist, bit of a philosopher at this point.
Definitely.
He made the point, he went into a, he had some bad medical history these last couple of years. He's gone through some real suffering. And he said the hard thing was, he says, I've been pushing myself my whole life. He says, I find difficult things to do and then I try to do them and I try to master them.
Sure.
And there's something, you know, very impressive about that.
Yeah.
But he said, it's been so hard to restart after I got out of my, you know, he suffered from a chemical addiction.
Yeah.
And then he had to be put in a medically induced coma to recover from it. And he's been recovering. So he's physically drained.
Yeah.
And on top of it, his wife went through a period with cancer where they thought she was going to die too. So he's emotionally drained. So all these things, bam, 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 right on top of it. And now he's trying to restart. And he says, I was doing all these difficult things, you know, podcasting, teaching, right, you know, lecturing, all this stuff says I was doing. He says, I thought back to a time, he says, I've only seen a handful of baseball games. He says, the first one I ever went to, he said, I thought it was the most boring thing I've ever seen. And he said, and I looked around and he said, why are these people here? Because they're not doing anything. And he said, oh. He says, I should have mastered simple things first, or had a couple of simple things where he says, I was just doing them. He didn't realize what he was talking about, I don't think, or maybe he did, but maybe he didn't use the word leisure. But he saw baseball like as a leisure activity that could be engaged in, so he didn't have to be constantly doing hard things and mastering hard things. This would be just something easy he could do if he was coming out of a coma. that would allow him to engage.
You know, just in case he was coming out of a coma.
Well, I mean,
yeah,
that would have allowed him to engage
right
in what it means to be human instead of all these higher activities, which are all good and
right
perhaps in a certain sense, better than watching a baseball game.
Well, what do they call baseball?
America's pastime.
And
there
you go.
And there it is.
And that's the reason why, right?
Exactly.
Like, baseball isn't actually, it's not a matter of it being, boring isn't the right word. I mean, that isn't really, it's not really the right classification. And yeah, you could watch an entire baseball game and have there be really two runs scored and have it still be a great game. Because of what it really is. You know?
Right.
So,
I don't know. Well, yeah, no,
there it is. That.
And then, again, to get back into sort of like the stratification of leisure, like you play a video game. Yeah.
That brought to mind something.
Go ahead.
So
go.
I had sort of left baseball behind for a long time and watched a lot of football. And, you know, the Cubs sort of fell off into they weren't winning anyway. So
the Cubs fell off.
as far as my own personal interaction with them.
Gotcha.
And then, you know, they of course, they started winning again. And I was in the middle of this sort of transition phase of like realizing the difference between just as sports, football versus baseball, about what they are in this human experience.
Yeah.
It just happened to be that I decided to come back into baseball when the Cubs started doing well. might have been a helpful thing with that. But really recognizing the sport for what it is, like, there's a lot more finesse. There's a lot more this leisure. Mm-hmm. You know, that's true naturally to baseball. Just strictly speaking in sports, than it is with football. I think I can say that pretty confidently because of what we're talking about.
Sure.
No, so anyway, that's, I'll just leave it at that.
Well, no, there it is. And then you step it up. Like Peterson pointed out, he said, these people aren't just watching the game. He says, sometimes they're doing that, but not very much. He says they're interacting with each other. They're eating popcorn or they're discussing something. So like there's this whole event.
There's a community there.
Encapsulated in it. And then I think back to sort of like the stratification of it. There's a community there. like playing a video game has a moment of satisfaction. And again, if the video game has, I don't know, some sort of altruistic story tied into it, maybe like Final Fantasy VII or something like that.
Imagination.
How good is the story you're interacting with?
Right.
Drawing you in and just drawing like out the better parts of your nature.
Just like a good novel.
Yeah, you know? As opposed to playing like Grand Theft Auto.
Right.
Where you're practicing vice, basically.
Jeez.
But again, like there it is. Like,
but I'm really good at it.
Well, and it makes you feel ugly by the end.
Yeah.
But then, like, playing with my Ninja Turtles was, dare I say, superior to the video game. Because I'm writing my own story. I'm not trapped inside the designer's storyline.
Right.
And I'm gaining from that. But better still, playing Ninja Turtles with my other friends. It takes me to, like, the concept of festival. Like, or feast day. Mm. Holy day. Like, some of my
or
best...
Or Sunday.
Well, we'll get to Sunday. We'll get to that. But like, my childhood memory of, like, the fall festival at St. Therese...
Mm.
Or Therese. Yeah, that's how we said it. Leisure. The but it's
call the whole thing off.
Yeah.
We're back to it. Go ahead. Fall Festival, St. Therese.
Like you'd run around and you had a bunch of tickets and you'd play a bunch of meaningless games, throwing balls into cups or something, or picking duckies out, or bobbing for apples or some
dunk tanking the pastor.
Yeah. Right. And how ancient that is. I mean, like you go back to the Middle Ages and you just had kids dancing around a maypole with, you know, like a rope and sticky buns and you know, funny tasting food and stuff like that. And it all centered around the church. Now, there was work that went into preparing that festival.
Yeah.
But then, and you know, quote unquote, work even in maintaining it. Somebody had to run the games and stuff like that.
Bilbo's birthday party comes to mind.
Mm.
Like the very natural, you know, everyone in the community is enjoying even the work of preparing for the feast. You know, the birthday party.
Sure.
You know.
Yeah, and what do we gain from Bilbo's birthday party? Nothing.
Nothing.
I mean,
whatever.
I mean, aside from, like, there's
11-1 years, life well lived.
Right. Somebody wants, you know, to be involved in it for the sake of having simply the credit of being involved and putting on a good time. Or
that's
somebody's
right.
looking to pick up some coin, you know, and that's all they care about.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, what's the extravagance of fireworks? Like, you... We'll spend a lot of money on high explosives that have colors in the sky. You
know, well, there's a and it'll all go away.
And it'll just go on. Just, you know,
literally burn it.
Literally burning money.
Yeah.
But
this is the fault of communist societies, right? I mean,
they don't
everything's gray.
Or hey, that's the 950,000th red firework I've seen in the sky today.
Yeah.
Were there other colors?
Right.
Yeah. And... Mm. But like there it is there's this communal aspect of participating in an activity that's based on order, predicated on order, which again, if you go to the theological reason because of the fall of man, it's going to cost somebody something.
Mm-hmm.
And but that's okay because the kid gets to win a bag of candy or, you know, one of those stupid sticky things you throw on the wall that leaves a mark but won't move. You remember those?
Yeah, of course.
Anyways, and then there's – or. And finally, like, I remember, and they discontinued this so long ago, but I remember we used to have a rosary walk at St. Therese where every, was it October or Lent? I can't even remember. I was little. They discontinued it. Broke my heart. But they had all this art up around the grounds of St. Therese. St. Therese has a decent footprint. As far as land they own.
Sure.
And there would be these different icons or images of Mary or statues with candles. And we would walk and pray the rosary from each one of those points to the next. And there was something beautiful and mysterious in it that captured the imagination of the child. And there would, you know, they'd sing the Ave Maria. They wouldn't even really sing that. It wasn't overly complicated. You know, it'd just be Ave, Ave, Ave Maria. Very simple tone.
Sure.
But something childish, childlike, and charming.
Yeah.
And why? Well, for the sake of honoring the Blessed Mother with candles and image. And then Sunday. Well, again, like, that's what Sunday should always be. Sunday should be, like, a mini festival as it celebrates the greatest event of humanity.
Well, I mean, so yeah. I was, I went to my grandparents for brunch yesterday after the 9 o'clock mass. They had come with my parents to mass and, you know, they invited me to brunch and my grandmother was like, you know, I cannot remember for the life of me what it's called. What do you do on Sunday nights when you go to the church? And I was like, are you talking about Vespers?
Oh yeah.
And she was like, oh, yeah, that's what it was called, Vespers. And because she was remembering something from her childhood. Right. You know, I mean, she's approaching, she will be, you know, 90 in a couple of years. Wow. Here. So, I mean, a good long time ago from her youth, right? Mm-hmm. It used to be back in the day that you would have multiple things you would do at church on Sunday. And it might be that you would go to Mass and hang out there for like a while. And then you might be around for Vespers and you'd go to Vespers. You know, you'd participate in the liturgy of the church multiple times that day.
Sure.
And it was your day, you know. And it's not saying that necessarily that needs to be something that, like, does come back. But gosh, I kind of wish it would.
Well, there's something to coffee and donuts after Mass, you know.
Sure.
There's something to like, this is the center of our society kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And there's some, again, there's something to, yeah.
Liturgically speaking, because I always do. this is my thing, you know. It used to be that, you know, a typical parish, you might have a couple masses on Sunday morning because of the size. And depending on the size of your parish, you might change that. Mm-hmm. But the early Mass was always like a low Mass. It was real quiet, real simple.
Yeah.
But then the pinnacle of the day would have been the high Mass. It would have been the one with all the music. It would have been the one with, you know, even multiple sacred ministers. It would have been the one with, you know, all the stops pulled.
Smells and bells.
I mean, smells and bells, right? Everything. All high church liturgy, mm-hmm. freaking awesome, you know, beautiful, right. Great. Like the pinnacle of the worship for the week.
Sure.
Okay. Happens on Sunday if there wasn't a feast, you know. Mm-hmm. So, and then from there flowed everything. It was later in the day because you would go to high Mass expecting the height of liturgy, and then you everything else would flow from that. The community would stick around after high Mass because you've already been there for an hour and a half, maybe longer, and, you know. And so it's like, well, what's hanging out for a little bit longer? Mm-hmm. Let's go to the parish hall, be together,
sure.
And, you know, have all the kids run around doing all sorts of crazy things like kids do. And then by the time Vespers comes around, you guys have had a wonderful day, and it's Vespers is the closing of it. Mm-hmm. So, okay, I want to do an episode on Hilaire Belloc.
Okay.
At some point.
Sure.
Hilaire Belloc was
friend a very, of G.K. Chesterton.
Very, very close friend of G.K. Chesterton. And he wrote this book called The Path to Rome. And at one point in the story, I've just gotten to this point in the book.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful. It's beautiful. He was finally in this book, it's about some of his conversion experience to like a fuller, deeper, richer Catholicism. Mm-hmm. Okay. And he writes about an experience where he comes across a real small village somewhere in the French Alps, and he's there a little bit in the afternoon, and he sees – well, he is admiring this church that's built right on the side of a river, and he's talking about how it's built out even into the river, and somehow, you know, those who built the church are – you know, they did the work to combat the most, you know, corrosive – well, not corrosive, or erosive, I should say – element in the world, which is water, you know.
Yeah,
in the river, you know.
Right.
Like literally the church is standing somewhat in the river.
Sure.
By necessity, just because of the space they had. And then all of a sudden the church bell starts ringing and like everybody in the town starts coming to church. And he's like, I've never seen such a complete Catholicism. Mm. Where everybody, you know, even men, even working men, as he said, mm-hmm. I think he said something like that, are coming to church. He's like, on an evening, what are they doing here? Mm-hmm. And he's like, and then I experienced it was Vespers. And he sort of waxes eloquent a little bit in the book, and he's talking about
– Fancy that.
Yeah. Well, this is the source. Maybe you've heard the – at least a piece of the poem, you know. But Catholic men who thrive upon wine are deep in the water and fair and fine or something like that. And – wherever I travel, I find it so. Benedicamus Domino is how he started. That's one mm-hmm. stanza of the poem. But he was getting to, you know, talking about like the richness of that community life and in an experience of this leisure where an entire community came together out of faith after having had the day of Sunday and ending it with sort of a punctuation mark, an appropriate punctuation mark, which is continued prayer. To send them into the week, you know.
There's something of heaven in that.
Yeah.
There's something of a rehearsal for the eternal.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The company in the saints.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was, yeah, gosh, I'll admit how much of a, how much of a pushover I am. I read that and then I had to like go home and read a portion of it to my father. Mm-hmm. And I was like reading through it and I got to a certain line and I just started to tear up.
Aww.
It's just like, it's but it was such an, it's so indicative of the divine. I'm like, he's having this experience of conversion in the midst of this leisure, you know, that is happening like naturally in a community. Like that's how it should be.
Right.
Yeah. Gosh, I'd love to form that sort of a thing, you know.
Well, please God. Again, there's something – there's so much about like the youth and leisure.
Yeah.
Like we keep returning to like childhood and then describing the leisure of that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, everybody's young in heaven kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there's – I don't know. Well, I'm tapped on this topic, brother, again.
Like, yeah, but I mean that's – I think that's probably a good place to sort of end with it. But
right.
I mean, it does have to do with looking into glory, you know.
Oh, truly.
It does. I mean, there's a reason why, you know, talking about what it means to keep the Sabbath day necessarily ends up being a conversation about what true leisure is.
Mm-hmm.
I think anyone who thinks well of these things will necessarily have to do a serious consideration of leisure.
Oh, and please
think
God,
deeply about it.
Please God gain by it.
Yeah.
Again, you are not made for work. You are not an automaton of this. Again, I don't want to. There's something even just joyous about like reflecting on this topic, mm-hmm. so much so that I don't want to even like sully it by bringing back up communism, and because I just want to remain in as pure a state of the leisure kind of mindset as I can, and it really speaks to the evils of sin that mm-hmm. it corrupts leisure and the, you know. Why did I, to paraphrase Augustine, why did I steal those apples or those pears? Hmm. You know, because it's really like the ultimate corruption of leisure. He's like, I didn't even need them.
Mm-hmm.
And again, what are we talking about? An activity we do simply for the sake of the activity.
Right.
Like, and there was the activity simply done for the sake of the evil of the activity.
Oh, wow.
And like the ultimate corruption, in a manner of speaking.
Yeah.
And you can take that to, again, what's sports? Sports is a... demonstration of physicality and prowess
mm-hmm.
For the sake of a goal.
Mm-hmm.
And what if that goal's hurting somebody?
Mm.
Or what if that goal is, you know, like just the raw glorification of self to the expense of others
mm.
or of another? Yeah. And the...
right.
And so you take the higher and if you... The corruption of the best is the absolute worst kind of thing.
Mm.
And again, yeah. So I don't know how far down that list I want to go. But maybe, again, Halloween was just, it's always in my rearview mirror. It's my favorite,
yeah,
quote unquote, secular holiday. but it has obviously massive, probably it was my favorite in my childhood because it had such religious connotations.
Mm.
But there it is. It's like you take that and you corrupt it, you twist it.
Mm-hmm. That's why there's such the, you know, in certain Catholic circles, the controversy around
Halloween. And again, I can see the potential there for its absolute abuse.
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, like there in no other holiday does, in my opinion, can you truly see the dichotomy so clearly
mm-hmm.
between how leisure can be abused or how it can be celebrated?
Right. Because there are other elements of Halloween, especially just like thinking from it from the perspective of my own childhood,
mm-hmm.
like and I imagine yours, there's something exactly about this like community involvement where you're enjoying each other's company with mm-hmm. people and it's not about it doesn't necessarily have to be about the candy. Everyone's excited about the candy.
Right.
As a kid you are. Of course you are, because it's sugar, you know, and you're a child.
Meh.
But
not a child, you get like, less excited about sugar.
But like, you don't just go trick or treating by yourself. You go right. with friends. You right. go with family, and you make a thing of it.
Well,
the
neighborhood is alive in it. Perfect yep. strangers will give you candy,
yeah.
and it's safe to take it from them.
Right.
And
hopefully,
and you get dressed up. You're in a costume.
Yeah.
And
in the end, you don't really care about like what you're dressed as.
No, it's the event,
mm-hmm.
and it's the joy of that sort of. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that raw engagement.
Mm-hmm. And so obviously you can slip into the degradation of it.
Oh, but, yeah, well.
But I mean, and some would say culturally there's still problems with like, you know, why are we dressing as, you know, your favorite superhero instead of like a saint, because it is All Saints Day, you know, and some you might be able to make an argument back and forth about that.
Well, not which on Hallows Eve, but the
what's that?
Unless you want to start the fact that the liturgical day is started at the evening.
Well, it is.
I know.
Yeah,
but
so I mean, that's the thing. It's like, what are we actually celebrating here?
Right.
So we'll get into that another time. I think we'll go ahead and leave it be.
All right,
leave it be for now.
But there it is, and Jesus Christ, he was all about leisure. Mm. He was all about rest.
Yeah,
he. But there's that old ancient story. Well, again, I don't know how ancient it is. They tell me it's ancient. That was Trumpish. St. John the Evangelist. They said they caught him once patting a rooster and playing around with like fowl and birds and stuff. And in his older age, and they said, "What are you doing?" You know, to this great apostle. And he says, "Well," he says. You have to relax if you want to do the work of God. And you know, Jesus Christ, I think of him having done all this work, having taught them about God.
Hmm.
Again, why? For the sake of worship and for the sake of their existence so that they couldn't fulfill it. And then he falls asleep in a boat and is just dead asleep. And or even better, after the death of John the Baptist, and there was Herod did not truly appreciate leisure. He degraded it to the utmost level, to the point where he ended up murdering a guy because of something that happened at a party. Then
something skeezy that happened at a party.
And then Jesus says, let's go get some rest because the boys come back from their mission trip. And he doesn't get to rest, but he wants to.
Yeah,
and he just wants to be with the guys for a while by himself.
Mm-hmm.
So, like the savior of humanity is seeking rest, is seeking leisure, and that's a beautiful thing for the sake of the mission, for the sake of the work of building up the kingdom.
Right,
that's why he wants to rest, and he keeps doing that. Again, like after that, then he tries to, they head off towards Syrophoenicia, where he's like, no, there won't be a lot of Jewish people around here, so we'll be able to be relaxed over here.
That's right.
And the Syrophoenician woman fights. And the apostles are even like, because they want a break too. They're like, tell her to go away.
Yeah.
But even the savior of humanity wanted a break. Mm-hmm. So to speak.
Yeah.
He made better furniture than IKEA, to be sure. Anyways.
Yeah.
The
His work was simply divine.
Oh.
Sorry. But Sorry. But,
and there's that weird combination of, he himself says, Sabbath made for the man or man for the Sabbath.
Yeah.
And there's that weird, not weird, 30 years, the hidden life. Mm-hmm. He spends just quietly, just doing his work and praying in the synagogue and being with his people and his family. And then the real work begins, but it's for the sake of getting to that eternal leisure point and getting everybody else there too.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Okay. To wrap up this podcast.
Yeah.
I have 4 shout outs.
Go nuts.
That are completely unrelated to our topic.
Oh, okay.
It's gonna be great. First off, to Mr. Anthony Sliger, a prisoner here at St. Charles, who wrote us an email that came in while we were yet recording.
Yeah.
Saying he's a fan.
Hi,
and that he found our podcast on our parish website.
Oh, very cool.
So, hey, thanks for listening.
Yeah.
That's great.
Praise God.
You know, hopefully there's something good that can be gained from our craziness. And I'm sure there is.
Well, God can work. God can write straight on crooked lines.
That's good. We are crooked lines for sure. Anyway, so that's one. So thanks for listening,
Number
Mr.
two.
Sliger. Number two. Miss Kyliana, who I sponsored last night or yesterday afternoon for confirmation.
That's really cool.
Yeah, yeah. She's a student at St. Jude's, and I got to know her family pretty well while I was there last year.
Praise God.
And so I had the great joy of being her sponsor at confirmation yesterday.
Congratulations on being ontologically changed.
No pressure, kid.
Yeah, that goes for all you Catholics out there.
That's right. Don't forget your confirmation. She took as her confirmation saint, Maria Goretti.
Ah,
oh, yeah.
Fancy that.
Very good. Also, our good friend, Father Paolo de Gasperi, happy birthday.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to hear it on his birthday, but we're recording on the day of his birthday.
I had to do it. I had to look up this morning the proper way for Italians to greet each other for when it comes to their birthday. Tanti auguri.
Okay.
Which means like many wishes or something like that. In the context of his birthday, it's like...
No, hey, so we're happy you're here.
I texted him. I texted tanti auguri.
Dude, seriously, so happy you're here, bro.
Yeah, we're really glad to have you.
Do you think he listens to this?
I doubt it.
Okay,
but go on. someone who listens, tell Father Paolo that we love him. Okay.
Yeah.
I knew this would happen. Oh, I got it. Okay. And then young Colby Zerba.
Oh,
welcome to the world. Yeah. Welcome to the world.
Well, he's been here a couple of weeks.
I know, but I haven't gotten a chance to say it on the podcast yet.
Oh, okay.
So shout out to Colby.
Colby.
Our friends, Parker and Maria, their firstborn, their newborn, mm-hmm. Colby.
Many years of leisure to you, boy.
Yep.
Don't forget to work.
So I have the joy of, they asked me to baptize Colby.
That's awesome. Weeks.
So yeah, that'll
good
be great
on
too.
You.
Yeah, I'm excited. So that's good.
Righteous.
Name's Crush. All right, that's enough of that. Very good. Thank you, Father Stephen Felicia. It's always a joy, my friend.
It's close to leisure when I come here and talk.
It's good.
Talking with you.
It's good. It's so good. Yeah, this is not servile labor at all. It's very good. So
cool.
All righty. All right, my friends. Find us Facebook, Instagram. Email us at deusvoltpodcast@gmail.com. Follow us anywhere you can listen to podcasts. And as always,
Deus Vult.